Open your Bibles, if you will, to the book of Nehemiah. In our study this evening of Nehemiah, we are going to attempt to cover chapter 11 and chapter 12, which is a little over 80 verses. But there's a lot of names. And since there are a lot of names, I finally decided, Aaron, be intelligent, utilize technology, and do it the smart way. So, you may disagree with me on whether or not it's a smart way, but in the sections that are predominantly names, we're going to listen to someone else read it by way of recording, which will A, increase or decrease the amount of time it takes to read those sections, and B, they should all be pronounced correctly. So, I think it will be improved on both areas. The reading is from the ESV because my source I'm using, King James, Scorby, is misplaced right now. So the names will be as they appear in the ESV. But hopefully we won't have any technical difficulties as we go through here. We won't be using every section allowing the reading to be done that way, but mainly the sections that are predominantly names. We will do that for the sake of time. And chapters 11 and 12 are somewhat different from the rest of the book of Nehemiah, not in the fact that they are less important, not in the fact that they are of any less significance, but they don't contain a whole lot of teaching. They are basically telling you, these are the people that dwelt in Jerusalem, these are the people that dwelt outside of Jerusalem, and then telling you in chapter 12 concerning a celebration day at the of rejoicing concerning the fact that the wall had been built, the temple was in full working order, all of the priests had been established in their roles, and the life of the Jews, the Israelites at this point, was continuing on. So that's the main focal point of chapter 11 and chapter 12. It doesn't contain a lot that we're going to be able to pull out of it, but I think it's significant to be able to at least view it, see what it has to say. There is no chapter in the Bible that is not worth studying. If you were willing to take the time at some point, it would be beneficial for you to go through, especially in the areas that talk about different cities, and see kind of the geography of these two chapters, of where people were living and where those who came back from the Babylonian captivity, how far out into the land of Israel they actually lived, to see just in reality how small that remnant was. So, you know, something that would be worth your time at some point would be to do that. Get out your Bible maps, or your maps in the back of your Bible. If you're like me and you have a Cambridge, you know that the maps in the back of your Bible are, thankfully, given with an index that tell you all the places where those cities are found on all of the maps. That's awesome. So you can just find the name of the city, and that'll tell you which map it's on and where. That's a really nice thing. If you don't have that, I'm sorry. But anyway, I do. But chapter 11, we'll begin there and notice a few points as we go along. Again, there's not a great deal that we'll notice from it, so I don't think it'll take us past midnight to get through these two chapters. Chapter 11, verse 1. Now the leaders of the people dwelt at Jerusalem, and the rest of the people cast lots to bring one of the ten to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and nine tents were to dwell in other cities. Alright, first thing we recognize here in the first few verses is that the leaders of the people, that is the leaders of all Israel at this time, predominantly Judah and Benjamin being the remnant of the southern nation, are dwelling in Jerusalem. So if you're one of the leaders of the people, you're a de facto dweller of Jerusalem. You did not go back and begin to live on your inheritance that God had given you as viewed in the book of Joshua. Alright? You dwelt in Jerusalem. After the leaders and their families dwelt in Jerusalem, the choice was, Who else lives here? Because up until the time that Nehemiah returned, it seems like Jerusalem has been basically deserted. Because the economy was in the dumps, the walls were destroyed, and in general, Jerusalem was uninhabited. So the question is now, who gets to live there? Who's going to live there? Who leaves their inheritance to come and dwell in the city of Jerusalem that has these brand new walls and has a temple that's now in working order? And so what they're going to do, according to these verses, is they're going to cast lots. And one out of every 10 families will dwell in Jerusalem. Verse 2, and the people blessed all the men who willingly offered themselves to dwell in Jerusalem. These are the heads of the provinces who dwell in Jerusalem. But in the cities of Judah, everyone dwelt in his own possession in their cities. Israelites, priests, Levites, Nethinim, and descendants of Solomon's servants. Alright, so you have the fact that first of all, there were no arguments about this. Nobody was saying, I wanted to dwell in Jerusalem, or no, I don't want to. Those who weren't dwelling blessed those who were, and there was peace in this choice. They all were willing to offer up at random who was going to go based upon who the lot fell on. And those would dwell in Jerusalem, the remainder would return to their inheritance. Alright, verses 4 through 9, we have the listing of those who were going out of Judah and Benjamin who would dwell in Jerusalem. Hopefully the volume is right on this.
And in Jerusalem lived certain of the sons of Judah and the sons of Benjamin. The sons of Judah, Athaiah the son of Uzziah, son of Zechariah, son of Amariah, son of Shephatiah, son of Mahalalel, of the sons of Perez. And Maaseiah, the son of Barak, son of Kohoseth, son of Haziah, son of Adaiah, son of Joiarib, son of Zechariah, son of the Shilonite. All the sons of Perez who lived in Jerusalem were 468 valiant men. And these are the sons of Benjamin, Shallum, the son of Shalom, son of Joab, son of Hadaiah, son of Kaleah, son of Maaseiah, son of Ithiel, son of Jesheah, and his brothers, men of valor, 928. Joel, the son of Zichri, was their overseer, and Judah, the son of Hasenuah, was second over the city.
Alright, a couple of things that we learn from this. First of all, we've got those from Judah, and then the listing of those from Benjamin. First of all, it's spoken concerning those of Judah, according to verse 6, that these were men of valor. They were valiant men. These were individuals, and the indication seems to be these are the heads of the people. It's not just a single person. It was the head of the family. Alright? But these were men who were recognized for their honor, their courage, their bravery. They were valiant, as that description goes. Notice also in verse 9, we have Judah, the son of Sanuah, was second over the city. Think back a couple of chapters, and you remember that Nehemiah placed someone in charge of the city of Jerusalem. Here's the second in command. Alright? And it was stated concerning the one that he put in charge that he was one who feared God above all the people. You can probably imply from that that the one who was chosen to be second in command was of like character. Alright? There's not much else that you're going to get from these unless you want to do an in-depth study of the genealogies of Israel. And for the sake of our study tonight, we're not going to go into that. All right? Verses 10 through verse 18, we have the priests and the Levites here named.
Of the priests, Jedaiah the son of Joiarib, Jacob, Sariah the son of Hilkiah, son of Meshullam, son of Zadok, son of Uriah, son of Ahijah, ruler of the house of God, and their brothers who did the work of the house, 822. And Adaiah, son of Jeroboam, son of Kalaliah, son of Amaziah, son of Zechariah, son of Asher, son of Malchijah, and his brothers, heads of fathers' houses, 242. And Amashai, the son of Azrael, son of Azai, son of Meshullam, son of Immer, and their brothers, mighty men of valor, 128. Their overseer was Zabdiel, the son of Hagdol. And of the Levites, Shemaiah, the son of Hashab, son of Azricam, son of Hashabiah, son of Bunah. And Shabbatai, Josabed, of the chiefs of the Levites, who were over the outside work of the house of God. And Mattaniah, son of Micah, son of Zabdiah, son of Asaph, who was the leader of the praise, who gave thanks. And Bakbukiah, the second among his brothers. And Abda, the son of Shemuah, son of Galal, son of Jeduthun. All the Levites in the holy city were 284.
All right. So here we have the listing of the Levites and the priests. Some interesting points as we go through here. First of all, verse 12. You've got these brethren who did the work of the house. And there were 822. The idea seems to be these were the ones who had part in the actual workings, the actual process of offering the sacrifices and doing the work of the temple. All right, these would have been the priests, 822 of them, who in their separate portions, and we're going to see that a little bit later, in their separate sections, would have taken turns, come, lived at the temple, dwelt in the side portions of the temple, and they would have done the work for their portion of the year within the house of the temple, or within the house of God. And so you've got those who are listed there. Those in verse 16, it is mentioned that they have sight of the business of the temple outside of the house of God. All right, so whatever had to be done, or whatever was a portion of their work in the courtyards of the temple, that was their responsibility. So you're seeing the dividing up of the work, the dividing up of the task within the temple and the other things. And then verse 17, you have mentioned concerning the one who was the son of Asaph, the leader of praise. All right, this would have been the one who was in charge of the singers of the temple. And he would have been in charge of making sure that they were all lined up, that they had their things in order, their different sections of who was working, who was doing what, figured out. All right, verse 19 through verse 21, which we won't be listening to, we'll just go ahead and read it, deals with the gatekeepers. 19 through 21, moreover the gatekeepers, Akkub, Talmon, and their brethren who kept the gates were 172. And the rest of Israel and the priests and Levites were in all their cities of Judah, everyone in his inheritance. But the Nethinim dwelt in Ophel, and Zihah and Gishpah were over the Nethinim. All right, so you've got three different verses all dealing with three separate things. First of all, you've got those who were the gatekeepers. The gatekeepers were the ones in charge of them were Akkub, Talmon, and their brethren, and they had the responsibility of keeping the gates of Jerusalem. Their job was to guard the city, to watch the gates. That was their responsibility. Alright, there were 172 of them, and there weren't 172 gates, so they didn't have to work 24/7, 365. The rest of Israel, according to verse 20, dwelt in their own towns. They dwelt in their own cities. They went back to their inheritance. Again, we can't help but reiterate the fact that over and over, Nehemiah makes sure you know that they didn't just go and dwell wherever they wanted to. They understood that their responsibility was to return to Israel as Israel was established by Moses and Joshua when they first came in the land. They were to go back, and they were not to move, as it's spoken of in Proverbs and other places, they were not to move the ancient landmarks. They were not to move the divisions of the dwelling place that was their inheritance. They didn't get more than they had before. They didn't get less. They dwelt where God had given them to dwell. Alright? That was their respect for the law of God. Verse 21, but the Nethinim dwelt in Ophel, and Zihah and Gishpah were over the Nethinim. The ESV states it this way, the temple servants dwell in Ophel. This seems to be those who were specifically, in some way, form, or fashion, they were attached to the temple, whether they were Jews or not, I'm not sure. but they were attached to the temple and they served in a capacity of some form in regard to the temple. Whether it was in regard to the physical structure, I don't know. Based upon any information that I found, I haven't been able to really gain a whole lot in regards to that. But they're referred to as Nethinim in the New King James. They're referred to as the temple servants in the ESV. Again, I don't know much one way or another in regard to that. Verses 22 through 24, we have the overseers and the singers spoken of. The overseer of the Levites at Jerusalem was Uzzi, son of Bani, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micah, of the sons of Asaph, the singers in charge of the service of the house of God. For it was the king's command concerning them that a certain portion should be for the singers, a quota day by day. Pethahiah, the son of Meshabel, the children of Zerah, son of Judah, was the king's deputy in all matters concerning the people. All right, so you have, again, the listing of the man who is in charge of the Levites, and specifically, it seems to be the Levites who were the singers within the services of the temple. All right, and so you have his name listed. You have this being taking place according to the king's command. Now, the king here is questionable as to who it is. It may go back to the commands, because we're going to see this in chapter 12, it may go back to the commands that David set forth for the singers within the temple. Or it may have reference to, for some reason, it may have reference to the king of Persia. And if it doesn't have reference to either of them, for some reason, at some point, somebody in Jerusalem is now being referenced as the king. I don't have an answer for that. I don't know who it's referencing. You can do your own study. You can come up with your own conclusions. And if you come up with any information that I haven't seen, feel free to share it with me. But I'm just not sure who it's referencing. Whoever it is, I do know that Pethahiah was his deputy, his right-hand man, as it were, in all the matters concerning the people. That seems to indicate that it was somebody in Jerusalem, and it was somebody that a Jew would have been the right-hand man. But it's not stated, and it's not clear. So I'm not going to go beyond what I can tell you from the Scriptures. All right, verse 25 through verse 36, we have the peoples in their villages.
And as for the villages of their fields, some of the people of Judah lived in Kiriath Arba and its villages, and in Dimon and its villages, and in Jekamziel and its villages, and in Jeshua, and in Moladah, and Beth-Pemah, and Hazar-Shual, and Beersheba and its villages, and Ziklag, and Mekona and its villages, in Enrimah, in Zorah, in Jarmuth, Zenoa, Adullam and their villages, Lachish and its fields, and Azekah and its villages. So they encamped from Beersheba to the valley of Hinnom. The people of Benjamin also lived from Geba onward, at Michmash, Ijah, Bethel and its villages, Anathoth, Nob, Ananiah, Hazor, Ramah, Gittaim, Hadid, Zeboiim, Nevala, Lod, and Onan, the valley of craftsmen. And certain divisions of the Levites in Judah were assigned to Benjamin.
All right. You've got basically just a listing of the cities where, and the villages and the towns where the people would have gone back to. And if you remember your Old Testament history, it is frequently stated that something occurred or something took place from Dan to Beersheba. Alright. The reason that those references are used was Dan was the northernmost city in the land of Israel. And Beersheba was the southernmost city in the land of Israel. And if you look there in verse 30, you have they dwelt from Beersheba to the valley of Hinnom, and that deals there with those from Judah. Alright. The valley of Hinnom is a valley that begins up in the northwestern regions up near the Sea of the Mediterranean Sea and comes down into the land of Judah, into the land of Israel. And so you have basically a description that Judah filled up in some form or fashion basically all of the land that they once held. Alright? Now, they weren't filling the land, but they were scattered throughout it because they all went back to their own inheritance. So you had people from every section, seemingly, of Judah that went back enough to fill up the, in a sense, the land of Judah. And all their territory was returned to them. Alright? Verses 31 through 35, you have mention of Benjamin, those dwelling in that area. I found it interesting that you've got the Valley of the Craftsmen. I don't know if that's like Silicon Valley or something like that, but apparently there was a trade that was predominant in that area. And then verse 36, the end of chapter 11, some of the Judean divisions of the Levites were in Benjamin. Okay? If you keep in mind the fact that the Levites received one-tenth of all the land, there seems as though there were more Levites who were originally in Judah than there were that came back that would have been a portion of the Levites that dwelt with Benjamin. Because of this reason for just splitting them up and actually giving them a portion in the land of Benjamin, some portion of the Levites that would have dwelt in Judah instead dwelt in Benjamin. Beyond that, I can't give you any explanation as to why, but it seems like maybe there would have been more that would have been congregated in Judah than in Benjamin, and so they just scattered them out in order to make sure that one-tenth was divided to all the Levites. Chapter 12, we're going to begin, if I can find my paper, we're going to begin with the priests and the Levites with Zerubbabel. Some of chapter 12 goes back and rehashes some genealogies from the past, catching you up on the situation of the priest and the high priest. And so that's what we're going to be dealing with in the beginning portions of chapter 12. Beginning in verse 1, going through verse 7.
These are the priests and the Levites who came up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, Seraiah, Jeremiah, Ezra, Amariah, Malak, Haddish, Jeconiah, Rehum, Meremoth, Iddo, Kenethoi, Abijah, Mitchum, Maadiah, Bilga, Shemaiah, Joyarib, Jedeah, Salu, Amok, Hilkiah, Jedeah. These were the chiefs of the priests and of their brothers in the days of Jeshua.
Alright. You've got, if you remember back to the book of Ezra and the beginning portions of Nehemiah, Jeshua was the priest that came back with Zerubbabel. He was the high priest at that time. And so here we have the heads of the priests with Jeshua. It seems as though that this harkens back to the idea of David dividing the priesthood up into 24 different orders. If my counting and the numbers that I read serve me correctly, there's only 23 listed here. 21 or 23, I don't remember. But there seems as though a couple of the orders fell by the wayside during the Babylonian captivity. But they return back, and the orders are again split up, and these are the priests, or the heads of the priests, that would have functioned under Jeshua as the high priest and would have later become known as the chief priest. Okay? That's where that concept comes from, is the heads of the orders of the priests and those who were elevated within those orders. Alright? Verses 8 and 9, we have the Levites in charge of the songs of thanksgiving.
And the Levites, Jeshua, Kenuai, Kadmiel, Sherebiah, Judah, and Mattaniah, who with his brothers was in charge of the songs of thanksgiving. And Bakbukiah and Benai and their brothers stood opposite them in the service.
Alright. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. They were in charge of the singers. And the going back into some historical background of singing in the first century and backwards in Hebrew tradition, it seems as though the singing would have been reciprocal. Alright? One portion or one group would have sung, and then it would have been answered by another group. Right? And so you see some standing on one side and some standing across from them. So you have that division and that reciprocal singing going back and forth. I don't know if you've ever been at a VBS where they had one side sing and then the other side sing. Well, that's kind of the idea. That's how that singing would have taken place during those times, at least in New Testament days. That was the common, the first century, that was the common method of singing. Verses 10 through 21, we have the descendants, we have genealogy of Jeshua the priest, and then you also have the heads of the houses in Joachim's day, which would have been one of the descendants of Jeshua.
And Jeshua was the father of Joachim, Joachim the father of Elijah, Elijah the father of Joiada, Joiada the father of Jonathan, and Jonathan the father of Jaddua. And in the days of Joachim were priests, heads of fathers' houses, of Sariah, Mariah, of Jeremiah, Hananiah, of Ezra, Meshulam, of Amariah, Jehohanan, of Molokai, Jonathan, of Shebaniah, Joseph, of Haram, Adnath, of Meriah, Helkai, of Iddo, Zechariah, of Geneva, Meshulam, of Abijah, Zichri, of many men of Moadiah, Hiltai, of Bilgah, Shemua, of Shemaiah, Jehonaphat, of Joarib, Mattaniah, of Judea, Uzai, of Salai, Kalai, of Amok, Eber, of Hilkiah, Hashabiah, of Judea, Nathanael. Then I brought the leaders of Judah up onto the wall with me.
I forgot to stop. Here you have, basically, again, descendants. The days of Jeshua, the guy who came back was Zerubbabel as high priest, are gone. Seems as though it's been enough time from that point until now that he's dead. You have the next generation of priests now dwelling, serving within the temple, and serving in those capacities. So here you've got those who were with Jeshua, those who returned initially with Zerubbabel, and now you've got those who were with Jeshua's descendants. Okay? It boils down to as simple as that. Okay? First generation, second generation. And that's what you have in those verses. Beginning in verse 22, you have a number of different things going down to verse 31, and we'll just kind of pick them up as we read the verses. Verse 22, during the reign of Darius the Persian, a record was also kept of the Levites and the priests who had been heads of their father's houses in the days of Eliashib, Johanan, and Jaddua. The sons of Levi, the heads of the father's houses until the days of Johanan, the son of Eliashib, were written in the book of the Chronicles. Okay? So you have here a reference concerning the fact that there was a record kept of these descendants, these generations that continued on down within the priesthood, and that record was kept within the book of Chronicles. I don't know, trying to think back because I forgot to look, if Chronicles actually, our Chronicles, contains any of those, and I don't believe that it does. I don't believe the ending of Chronicles goes that far, and so that would have been something that, Chronicles being a general term for the chronicling of events that would have taken place, it may have been something either that was a lost portion of what we now know as Chronicles, or it may have been something else entirely. We know many times throughout the history, both Kings and Chronicles, that other books are mentioned that we don't have, and by all indications weren't pertinent to the inspired revelation and historical accounts of the Old Testament. So these things would have been taken care of there, and that's what he's dealing with. Verse 24, the heads of the Levites were Hashabiah, Sherebiah, and Jeshua, son of Kadmiel, with their brothers across from them, to praise and give thanks, group alternating with group, according to the command of David, the man of God. All right, this deals with, again, the singers and that how they would have served in their function, and that it was according to David's command that these things took place. Now, when you have the fact that it is according to the command of David, the man of God, that tells you something. David wasn't speaking of David's own volition. David didn't decide, I really like singers, and I really like them to play the trumpets and the harps and singing in portion with the work of God and the things, the events of the temple, so I'm going to start this tradition. No. The idea of the man of God is always used in the Bible in reference to one who spoke by prophecy or spoke by revelation. Therefore, it would have been through David instituting it, but through God's command that these things took place. And for that reason, they're reinstituted here through the events of the book of Nehemiah. And so you had the command being rehearsed and the things being taken care of, each individual person taking care of their own responsibilities. Verse 25, Mattaniah, Bakabiah, Obadiah, Meshulam, Talmon, and Akkod were gatekeepers keeping the watch at the storerooms of the gates. These lived in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Jeshua, the son of Josadak, in the days of Nehemiah the governor, and of Ezra the priest, the scribe. Alright? So giving you a reference that, again, this is the second generation. These are the ones who were living at this time, who are the descendants of those who lived in the days of Jeshua. Verse 27 through verse 31, we have the beginning of an event. This event was to take place to dedicate the walls. If you go back to 1 Kings, in 1 Kings chapter 8, we're not going to spend any time there, but it's important just to get a view of things. When the temple was first built by Solomon, after the temple was completed, after the years that it took to complete the temple, they had a dedication ceremony. And at that dedication ceremony, you have Solomon offering a prayer that if you ever want a good study of important matters within the Old Testament, go read and study Solomon's prayer. And look at the things that take place throughout the remainder of Israelite history that tie into that prayer. But you have the events taking place there. You have a speech, you have a prayer by Solomon, you have the celebration that continues on, and Solomon blessing the assembly there within chapter 8. Nehemiah, the wall has been completed, the work has been done, the temple has been reestablished, the orders of the priesthood have been put back into their places. It's cause for rejoicing, cause for celebration, and that's exactly what they do. Verse 27. Now at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought out the Levites in all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgiving and singing, with cymbals and stringed instruments and harps. And the sons of the singers gathered together from the countryside around Jerusalem and from the villages of the Netophathites, from the house of Gilgal and from the fields of Geba and Amaveth, from the singers had built themselves villages all around Jerusalem. Then the priests and Levites purified themselves and purified the people, the gates and the wall. So I brought, I'm going to stop there. They purified them. All right. The events that take place. First of all, they go out and get all the Levites. All right. Don't leave anybody out. No matter what city they dwell in, whether they're in Benjamin or Judah, bring them to Jerusalem. And then we find the singers coming in all of their villages. And it seems as though, as we get down into later portions, that part of David's command was to treat the singers within the temple service as equally they treated the Levites. That they received a portion of land to dwell in, and that they were their own group, their own entity within the Levites, taking care of these matters. And so all of those are brought together. They come to Jerusalem. And beginning in verse 31, down through the end of the chapter, we have, down through verse 43, we have the rehearsing of the events of that day.
Then I brought the leaders of Judah up onto the wall and appointed two great choirs that gave thanks. one went to the south on the wall to the Dung Gate, and after them went Hoshea and half of the leaders of Judah, and Azariah, Ezra, Meshullam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah, and Jeremiah, and certain of the priest's sons with trumpets, Zechariah, son of Jonathan, son of Shemaiah, son of Mattaniah, son of Micaiah, son of Zachar, son of Asaph, and his relatives, Shemaiah, Ezra, Milalai, Gilalai, Maai, Nathanael, Judah, and Nani, with the musical instruments of David, the man of God. And Ezra the scribe went before them. At the fountain gate they went up straight before them by the stairs of the city of David, at the ascent of the wall, above the house of David, to the water gate on the east. The other choir of those who gave thanks went to the north, and I followed them with half of the people on the wall, above the tower of the ovens, to the broad wall, and above the gate of Ephraim, and by the gate of Kishana, and by the fish gate, and the tower of Hananel, and the tower of the hundred, to the sheep gate. And they came to a halt at the gate of the guard. So both choirs of those who gave thanks stood in the house of God, and I and half of the officials with me, and the priests, Eliakim, Maaseiah, Minyamin, Micaiah, Eliuena, Zechariah, and Hananiah with trumpets, and Maaseiah, Shemaiah, Eleazar, Uzziah, Jehohanan, Malchijah, Elam, and Ether. And the singers sang with Jezrahiah as their leader. And they offered great sacrifices that day and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The women and children also rejoiced. And the joy of Jerusalem was heard far away.
Alright. It's as simple as summarizing this section. Nehemiah says, half of you go that way, half of us are going this way. They went up on top of the wall, and the indication seems to be that they began to sing, they began to praise, and they began to blow their trumpets as they were walking around the city. Well, what would that have done? It would have notified everyone in the city, go to the temple. Because that's where they were going. They were going one on one wall, going one direction, one on the other side of the wall, going the other way, and they met at the temple where the celebration took place. And so you have this this walking around on top of the wall. Of course, bear in mind, when we're talking about a wall in these days, we're not talking about a wall that's, you know, foot and a half thick. We're talking about a wall. We're talking about something that's going to withstand siege engines. We're talking about something that's going to withstand the enemy. Alright, so we're talking, and it was not unheard of to have walls thick enough to have, as it's described, chariot races three abreast on top of the wall. Alright, we're talking about a massive structure. And so these individuals and their and the singers went up on top of the wall, one going one way, one going the other, and they met at the temple. When they met at the temple, they came down from the wall, the celebration began, the dedication took place, and the joy of Jerusalem was heard afar off. They weren't worried about any laws saying you need to keep the noise down. They were letting their joy be known that they were back in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was safe. It had been blessed by God. And they were praising Him for it. Verse 44 through verse 47. And at the same time, some were appointed over the rooms of the storehouse for the offerings, the first fruits and the tithes, to gather into them from the fields of the cities the portions specified by law for the priests and Levites, for Judah rejoiced over the priests and the Levites who ministered. Alright, you have those who are set in charge of making sure the people did what they had to do in view of the tithes, the offerings of first fruits, and the other offerings in regards to the temple. It was such that they had obliged themselves to do it. It was part of the law, and they made sure that it was going to take place, and that those portions were overseen to make sure that they went where they belonged. 10% of everything went to the Levites. 10% of all that Israel had went to the Levites, but then a tenth of that went to the priests, and then there were the other divisions as well. And so, just all of these things are being taken care of. Verse 45, both the singers and the gatekeepers kept the charge of their God and the charge of purification according to the command of David and Solomon his son. They weren't willing in any of these areas to let down what they had been commanded. They were going to see to it. They were going to be pure before God and serve as holy servants. For in the days of David and Asaph of old were the chiefs of the singers in the songs of praise and thanksgiving to God. In the days of Zerubbabel and in the days of Nehemiah, all Israel gave the portions for the singers and the gatekeepers, a portion for each day. They also consecrated holy things for the Levites, and the Levites consecrated them for the children of Aaron. Alright? So you have the offerings being taken up, and all through the days of Zerubbabel and Nehemiah, you have them preparing and setting aside their portions for the Levites, for the singers, for the gatekeepers, all working in the service of the temple. They were not willing to let down on their responsibilities because of their situation. They did these things in spite of the fact they weren't powerful. They weren't rich. Many of them, some of them were, is still in great deals of abject poverty. And yet, they served because they knew their responsibilities. And we need to have the same mindset that they have. We need to be maintaining the work of God. We need to maintain our responsibilities. We need to keep view of what God has blessed us with. Be thankful and praise Him. And there's not much else that I think you can gain from these two chapters, at least in this study. But feel free to, again, look at some of those things that I mentioned. Go back, research some of the genealogies. It is interesting to see the descendants and how some of those events take place in their ancestry. And those things, I think, will benefit your life and improve your study. All of that being said, Nehemiah, as we're nearing the end of it, we have one chapter left, is a book that is important. Why? It's inspired of God. And just like every other book that is inspired of God, it pertains not only to the days of old, but it has something to say for our lives. It has something to say for our dedication. It has something to say to us about how we live. And we should treat it as such. There should not be a book of the Bible that we just say, well, yeah, I haven't studied that in 15 years, but it doesn't really, you know, either I can't understand it or it doesn't say anything that I need to hear. That was then. No. Even a book that is mostly historical narrative blesses our lives if we study it as God's Word. And we need to remember these things. If you're here this evening and you have need of responding to the invitation, all of us here know what is involved in that, and the opportunity is made available as we stand and as we sit.